from the start of Trump's meteoric rise, a veritable cottage industry of Trump as X comparisons has emerged. According to Adam Johnson of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the media have compared Trump to more than 100 someones or somethings since he first embarked on his bid for the presidency. Those include real-world strongmen.
Comedians, commentators, and even some Holocaust survivors have seen scenes like this and have compared Trump's tone and his actions to that of Hitler and Hitler's ally, Mussolini.
When you look at Zuma and Trump, it seems like they're brothers from another mother.
Some similarities between Presidents Erdogan and Trump. Both are populist leaders, both are not particularly known for their thick skins, and both have a fairly dubious relationship with press freedom, although...
Fictional villains.
He's Darth Vader, come on. Compelling, cold, disciplined, yet tortured by emotion he desperately tries to suppress.
Or Robert De Niro turned heads as he accepted the Lifetime Achievement Award in Bosnia by comparing his crazy, deranged character from that Taxi Driver movie to Donald Trump.
She told us candidly why she finds Donald Trump so objectionable.
He's Voldemort.
And yes, inanimate objects.
You liken Trump to the Samsung Galaxy Note 7.
Yeah, it just struck me as so clear that there he was flaming out in one debate after another, and she's kind of like the iPhone 7.
But the media's favorite Trump comparison, by a mile, was to Latin American strongmen. By Johnson's count, Trump has been compared to Venezuelan leaders alone at least 30 times, particularly the late Hugo Chavez.
The critics are saying that he, Donald Trump, really reminds folks of Chavez.
He approximates the strongman personality of a Chavez. It's the idea that people like him because he's an authoritarian figure.
One of the things they often do is they conflate political analysis with cultural generalization and cultural stereotypes.
John Patrick Leary is the author of A Cultural History of Underdevelopment, Latin America in the U.S. Imagination. To him, Trump as Chavez is an example of a comparison that relies on uncomfortable stereotypes.
You know, they had very different politics. One styled himself an anti-imperialist, one styles himself, frankly, kind of an imperialist. America first, the rest of the world last. One was a socialist, one was an ardent and proud capitalist. I think those political distinctions, however you assess them, are the most important.
Here's a comparison made by Jennifer McCoy in a Reuters piece. Chavez and Trump, quote, eschew political correctness and routinely speak in an informal, unscripted style, connecting directly with voters who have felt invisible. And I would add to that, vulgarly and crudely, which is sort of outside of the political norm. Not fair?
Some of his crudeness is certainly outside of the political norm, which is, I think, what drives a lot of the reaching for foreign analogies. But again, you know, speaking directly to the common person, disavowing elites, these are all part and parcel of the American presidential political vocabulary. After all, make America great again was Reagan's slogan before it was ever Trump's.
One thing Trump has done, like many a demagogue before him, is to stoke fear about a sinister other that is going to harm our way of life or our very national security. Chavez also had a sinister other, except it was the right-wing oligarchy that controlled so much of the economy, so many of the institutions, and especially the media. Is there a comparison to be made there?
Well, there's a comparison, but I think there's also a key contrast. I mean, the other that you refer to with Trump is an ethnic, a racial, a national other, right? And the internal domestic antagonist that Chavez had was essentially a class difference. And so when you're making a kind of class critique, that's very different, I think, than making a ethnic or racial critique.
One of the things that ticks you off is the thinly veiled condescension that you say underlies a lot of these comparisons.
One of the associations that people often make between Chavez and Trump is an impulsiveness, a kind of hot-headedness. Now, of course, we in the United States, Anglo-Americans in particular, United States, like to think of themselves as dispassionate, cool-headed, and deliberate. And it's a common and long-standing stereotype of Latin Americans that they're the opposite, that they're impulsive and passionate and driven by kind of irrational exuberance. That's, I think, at the heart of most of the comparisons with Chavez.
Some of the language that's come up regarding Trump is the notion of running the United States like a banana republic.
I would say it's chilling that Donald Trump thinks that the presidency is like some banana republic dictatorship where you can lock up your political opponents.
If this were some kind of banana republic, President Trump would have no pushback from any institution.
Trump really is talking like a strongman in a kind of banana republic. I mean,
it's important to remember where that phrase came from. It referred to Latin American countries, especially in Central America, that were dictatorships and where politics and the economy were subjugated by an imperial power from abroad.
Local despots underwritten by Standard Oil, United Fruit, and the CIA.
Right. To use the phrase banana republic suggests a real lack of empathy about those abuses and what that phrase means. And I can't help but hear a little bit of nostalgia for the time when the United States threw its weight around in that kind of aggressive way, and a little bit of nostalgia for the time when the banana republics knew their place and we really knew ours.
Now, one final point of comparison between Trump and Chavez was their fondness for the TV machine. Trump, of course, was a reality TV star, and Chavez had a regular Sunday TV show where he spoke directly to the public. Is that a legitimate observation?
Well, I hate to be so stubborn. It seems strange to me to treat American politicians manipulating the TV as a strange import from Venezuela. You know, John F. Kennedy would probably object to not getting any credit for that. Franklin Roosevelt might want to join in as well.
It seems to me that no matter which of the possible points of comparison I raise, your answer is sort of to cross your arms and set your jaw and say, don't lay your imperialist trip on me. You just aren't willing to entertain the comparisons because you think there is a larger ethnocentrism and imperialistic assumption at work here?
Well, briefly, yes. I think one of the things that motivates a lot of historical analogies is an attempt to make sense of something we can't explain or that frustrates our expectations. And we're accustomed, I think, in the United States to thinking about the United States as exceptional, as we often hear, right? As standing apart from the world, as unique. And our politics are supposedly driven by rational argument, by the competition of the best ideas, rather than being driven by a contest of opposing forces and who has more power than the other, who has more money than the other. One of the things I think that the rise of the Trump administration should tell us is that perhaps we in the United States aren't really so special. Perhaps we're really not actually so different from the rest of the world. But that is, I think, a difficult and unaccustomed way for Americans to understand the politics of our country. And so faced with that kind of conundrum, we resort to these old kind of cultural stereotypes, a lot of which are drawn from the Cold War. And I think that's in a way a kind of dodge, because if we want to make sense of where Trump came from, we have to kind of look our own racist authoritarian political traditions squarely in the eye. We have to think about the rampant class inequality that has in part set the stage for someone who claims that he alone can fix it to come in and claim to fix it.
John, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Nice talking to you.
John Patrick Leary is a professor at Wayne State University in Detroit and author of A Cultural History of Underdevelopment, Latin America in the U.S. Imagination. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, and Jesse Brenneman. We had more help from Michael Loewinger, Sarah Kari, Leah Feder, and Kate Bakhtiarova. And our show was edited by this week executive producer Katya Rogers. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Terrence Bernardo. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Bob Garfield. We'll be right back.
Support for On the Media comes from the Overbrook Foundation and the listeners of WNYC Radio.